Hi, it's Dave. This past March, I started an exploratory stock position in the company Cloudflare, ticker NET. Developers and companies use their web services to improve performance and security, and currently about 10% of the world's web traffic goes through Cloudflare. In this video, I talk with a data architect who specializes in software as a service companies, and we discuss Cloudflare and its competitor, Fastly, what they do and what their growth prospects are going forward. We also discuss if Starlink can become a possible competitor. All right. Today, I'm here joined with Muji from Hypergrowth, spelled with a triple E at the beginning. He's on Twitter and he has a website as well. And he's been analyzing software as a service companies on his website and on Twitter for a while. I first got introduced to him by reading his Snowflake analysis last month or so when Snowflake went IPO. It was a good read. And I also was reading a bit more into Cloudflare and Fastly. And there are a couple companies that I'm interested in. I started exploratory position in Cloudflare earlier this year. I've been following them for a while. So I kind of wanted to make this a learning session with Muji here, because this is kind of what his main focus is on investing in software as a service. And I wanted to, rather than make it a formal interview, I wanted to say, hey, let's make this a time where I can learn as much as I can and answer my questions. And then what we'll also do is we'll try to pare it down where my viewers can also, we'll try to pare down the concepts. So to make it simple enough where my viewers can also follow along and understand what's going on. So I first want to welcome you, Muji. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, Dave. I appreciate the invite. And yes, we can talk. I can riff on any of it and even have questions about Starlink and some other, other ways of accessing the internet that you know a lot more than I do on. So This could be a win-win here.
Yeah, fun.
And then,
fun.
Yeah, I can dial the technical jargon up or down, depending on however basic you want to do it. It's Hypergrowth with three H's, .com. And I did have a kind of introductory discussion kind of for individual investors to be able to understand what edge networks are. And so I would recommend, if folks haven't read that, maybe hitting pause and go read that for 30, 40 minutes.
Sounds good.
And
I'll
it kind of dives into what the, you know,
exactly. I'll go ahead and
the reasons for being are.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and link to your post on edge networks in the video description. So you can go ahead and pause it if you're interested. Okay. So I have a bunch of topics here and feel free. We'll just kind of feel free to discuss and go through each one. First, I'm curious. I know your focus is kind of software as a service, hypergrowth, so fast growing companies, subscription model, et cetera. Can you explain kind of why you're so excited about software as a service? I know, I think your day job is a data architect. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So this is kind of your field, but what do you see so special about, this software as a service industry? What do you see it? What's your main investment thesis, I'm saying, for the next like 5 or 10 years regarding software as a service?
So I named my blog Hypergrowth. I consider that growing 40, 50% or more. And right now with the pandemic, obviously there's all kinds of success going on that front, whether it's e-commerce or, med tech. And I focus on SaaS companies, which are, have a lot of things going for them that appeal to me. Recurring revenue. I love recurring revenue. It's really changed the ball game from, I've been an investor for 20 plus years. And it's really changed from kind of the consumption model of companies where, you're making widgets, you've got logistics to handle. You've got to take those widgets and figure out how to sell more of them the next year. All that's kind of out the door. You've got a software as a service platform that you can put up some kind of service, whether it's B2B, business to consumer, or business to business. I kind of consider that the app economy, where you're going to consumer and you're really trying to spread some consumption app, whether it's social media, e-commerce, or productivity apps, or B2B, which is business to business, which I consider the API economy, where you having these things intercommunicate in order to exchange data between platforms. but it's recurring revenue. It's subscription based. I'm, you know, besides a minor amount of churn, I'm guaranteed the same sales as the year before, this year plus more. But I look for great customer growth. I look for net retention or net expansion rate, well over 100%, even better, over 120% consistently. That means last year's customers are spending more this year. They're finding more in the platform, either consuming more if it's usage-based, or they're finding more in the platform to sign up for. And then customers are still flocking to the solution now. And so you get that hyper-growth kind of up front in the top line as recurring revenue. And then I also look for operational leverage. So signs that they can really pivot their operations on a dime. Costs are really contained. Costs are focused right now on growing as much as possible. But at any point, they could, you know, flip the paradigm of their company and be profitable. And so I look for those signs of operational leverage. But I'm a technologist at heart, so I really look at, you know, what's going on with the technology and the platform, and trying to find, you know, what's the exciting new waves of tomorrow mm-hmm. that you're all about. So that's mm-hmm. why I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
A fellow technologist. And so you try and find what's going to be big over the next 5-10 years and try to invest in those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to ask your take on Cloudflare versus Fastly. But first, I kind of want to dive into Cloudflare specifically. And I want to break down kind of the major parts of the company. I know they offer a ton of different services and we can go on forever, but I want to break down just a few of their key kind of offerings and kind of get your take on that. And let's try to maybe pare down the explanation so, like, you know, an 8-year-old would be able to hopefully, you know, follow the conversation. So let's start with, first off, I worked on a few of these things. So first off, let's talk about Cloudflare as more of a proxy service, like a security service. Second, Cloudflare as a content delivery network or a CDN. And number three, let's go into edge network and edge computing. So the first one on proxy, so it seems like Cloudflare, that was kind of one of their first things, you know, they did many years ago. They became kind of a proxy. You changed your, you know, DNS, your domain name server, you know, to Cloudflare, and they're able to be a proxy where they were able to prevent these DDoS attacks and help you do that. And I guess alongside with that, you have, you know, Cloudflare also doing, I guess, smart routing or load balancing. So can you kind of talk about this first area of Cloudflare kind of as a proxy, giving security to kind of websites around the world?
Yeah, you've definitely nailed the three kind of focuses of their platform. I would throw content delivery in there kind of all as one, although it's an offshoot of what they set up for security and performance. But absolutely, they sit basically between all the users making a request of a web application and the server that's serving up that content. And so they would serve as the proxy between those things, meaning that you make a request to Cloudflare's network, Cloudflare goes and gets, you know, the information off of the web server and will give it back to the user. And so they provide a layer. And because of that, they can provide security, obviously prevent denial of service attacks. So they're the ones absorbing all the requests, and then they're the ones talking to the back end. And so they're a protective umbrella over your web servers. But there's a lot of benefits to that. And the immediate one then is content caching. They can request content that's static, so blog posts, videos like this, so, you know, any kind of text or video-based content that doesn't change, they can request once and serve up from their cache servers. And so they are a CDN as well, content delivery network, and they get lumped into that industry quite a lot. But it's really just one thing they do, leaving out edge networks from the equation right now, it's just one thing they do serving as the proxy over your server. Mm-hmm. And so they focus on security and performance and reliability of your web assets mm-hmm. is their primary claim to fame and what they've done for a number of years.
Yeah. I mean, one example is, like, you know, we say we're setting up a website for, you know, my team. We're going to put it on Cloudflare, at least, you know, the DNS, the domain name service, because first off, you know, I get They have actually a free tier. I mean, they're kind of popular in the indie developer community because they have a very generous free tier that protects your websites from these denial of service attacks, gives some security, and then they actually have this, you know, content delivery network, or they are able to cache certain assets so that you're not, you know, hogging bandwidth. Like, for example, I have this website, and instead of having to serve all of the assets from my server to the end user computer all the time, Cloudflare is basically caching the most used assets. And they have data centers over 200 cities around the world. And they'll basically serve it from their data center closest to the user, some of the key assets, right, to speed up loading of the sites. A ton of WordPress sites use this because, you know, you could use Cloudflare, their CDN service, and then the amount of bandwidth you're transferring reduces significantly because the caching, just all of these blog articles that your blog site is sending out or, you know, showing, is just cached on all these servers. And so now the user just has to hit the cached, you know, server and closest to them. And so, I mean, it's a ton of people are using this stuff. I guess, but
think about the eras there of just what you're describing. Days of old, you would stand up your own web server on your own data center or even on premise. And so you bought this, you know, strong, powerful computer to serve up all these web requests and kind of figure out how to expose it to the internet. They immediately in that scenario would save you bandwidth. You've already have all the infrastructure, but they're saving you in bandwidth costs to your ISP. Let's say it's only making a thousandth of the requests because it's serving up from cache. In cloud, that is even more significant because cloud, everything is scaled to use. And so you're able to exactly dial in cloud compute, the amount of compute and memory and storage that you need. And so now, instead of you buying these incredibly powerful servers up front and having all these upfront costs, especially if you're a startup, you can just have a small web server serving up this content, and then Cloudflare or some other CDN can be providing that content out to the globe. So not only are you saving the bandwidth costs, but you're able to scale your compute costs down to a fraction of what they used to be. And so these CDNs are, you know, it's a commodity industry right now, but it's for a reason. They save everyone a significant amount of cash in serving up content.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, it's kind of like the what's going on behind the scenes with the internet serving content. It's like, you know, if I have a site and if I'm pushing, you know, the images and videos every time, you know, the site loads to, let's say, millions of users, that's a huge amount of bandwidth. Versus if those images and those videos on that page are actually cached, right, at a data center closest to the user and it just hits them, then I save a ton of bandwidth. I mean, you're talking about it's like a no-brainer. You know, if you have a heavily trafficked website with images and photos, pictures, et cetera, to do like content delivery network. That's kind of one of the reasons why I kind of first got interested in Cloudflare, because I'm like, you know, we're using the service, and then they offer a generous free tier. So like all these developers use it all over the place. And the content delivery network is like very practical. It saves money, et cetera. The question, and I wanted to explore this with you, is kind of like, okay, what's next? You know, because it's like this whole proxy thing and CDN, this content delivery network, it's kind of almost like a solved problem in some ways. You know, there's lots of options. People are coming into that industry. Does Cloudflare have what it takes to really take this next big jump into a huge market that is just going to take people by surprise? And that's where I ran across your whole, you know, writing on edge networks or edge computing. And I wanted to kind of dive into that a bit more, in kind of like, here we have Cloudflare, they're expanding now basically what their data centers can do, right? So they have like, it's 200 data centers or whatever all around the world. And they're letting now developers run JavaScript code on these data centers through, I think, what they call Cloudflare workers, right? And by doing that, they're offsetting like some of the computing load from the central servers, right? Or the central cloud, you know, platforms that they use. So that first it'll save, I guess, latency, because, you know, you'll have a quicker experience. You could maybe even do smart computing where you're not, you know, processing all the information, but certain parts of information because you're closer to the user. But all of this is like, I'm curious, like, how big is this market really? Is Cloudflare really gonna be the big winner in this market? How are you viewing kind of edge networks and kind of Cloudflare's potential there?
So that's definitely what I cover in my write-up, is the transition of how these companies have kind of built next generation content delivery platforms. And so they build up all the bandwidth to all these data centers situated around the globe that are near the internet interconnects, you know, kind of major hubs of network switching between continents and between ISPs and providers. They've built up all these servers to serve content. And so Cloudflare and Fastly both are pivoting that platform. They've taken approaches in how they design that platform that are, to me, vastly better than what the legacy players like Akamai have done, in order to have that flexibility where they can now basically have an edge network, which is they've got a globally spanning network that's basically a private internet. And so they've got their own backplane of data going between Chicago and New York, New York and London, London and Hong Kong. And the servers that were previously setting up set up for content caching are now able to run logic. And so it's not just a dumb content caching system. Developers can absolutely now write programs in a wide variety of languages and deploy them as serverless engines. And so this is akin to AWS Lambda, which kind of made serverless popular, which is writing a function as a service. So you're writing a single function to do one thing. It's what's called stateless programming, which means you're not memorizing what you are, not a database. It's receiving a request, acting upon it, and sending you a response back. Now that request might be talking to a database backend behind it. So, you know, Lambda can be writing data into a database or doing things with it. But in and of itself, it's just a function that does something. It's a building block. And so now you can push those building blocks to every city around the globe. You know, it's funny, when Cloudflare put out Workers, their deployment choice is the globe. You push it out to all edge servers at once. Now, there's some nuance to that, but we can get into. But they've basically pivoted their platform to be a giant programmable network between all these cities. And then you have compute and logic choices that you can make at every server between the servers. And so when you think about a typical request that's going through an edge network, so it's a request that traditionally through Cloudflare would be, I'm a user in North Carolina, I'm making a request, and I talk to a edge server that's in DC. That edge server is going to go through their private network to wherever I'm requesting data from. Let's say London Stock Exchange. It goes to London, it exits their network in London and talks to the server for the London Stock Exchange, and then reverses that entire route. So, you know, if I was making that request in the internet, that would go through a series of hops. It'd go through, you know, the ocean floor cables going between continents. And with Cloudflare, they've already kind of created those fast lanes, and it's able to go through their entire network. But now with edge networks, is there's an edge server at both ends. And so it's not kind of one of the epiphanies I had after writing the article, is that the way these things were designed initially is for what's called a pub-sub mentality. You're publishing content and then someone's consuming it, and all the usage is at consumption. You know, so you're producing a video once, YouTube's putting that video somewhere, and millions of views are coming in, if you're popular, and consuming that content. And that content can be distributed around the globe, so that users in Southeast Asia are talking to the Hong Kong server, and your users in Europe are talking to, you know, various servers in Europe. But now the edge network can go all directions. And so there's a view, and Gartner, the industry kind of leader in tech views, agrees with this, is that there's going to be a lot of content coming from the endpoints. And so right now you had a system built around publishers. I'm publishing this data and you are consuming it. But now what if you flip that upside down and say, what if we're publishing all the content from the consumers? The consumers are the one pushing the content in. And IoT is a perfect example. You have all these devices that are collecting, all your sensors in a car pushing data out. Where is that data going to go? One giant cloud server? No, you can be making choices. It's going to the nearest edge server, and there can be logic decisions about where it's going from there. Or the reverse, even if it's still that PubSub mentality, I'm making a request to a website, but the edge, that server in DC, can be making choices about where it's gathering that content from in order to gather it as quickly as possible, not just bouncing around the globe to go get this stock quote. It could be talking to local servers for parts of that content, content stitching, where you're I'm building this request that you're making from multiple sources, and I'm pulling them all as fast as I can from the edge server, not going all the way to the cloud in order to do that farther away to transmit it back.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of different scenarios you've got now with edge servers that, and this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading on, I think it was Cloudflare's website or so, them giving the example of video cameras, right? So you have home security system that's set up, you have like, let's say 5 or 10 cameras, and they're on motion detection or something. And they're giving this example of, rather than sending all of the footage right to a central server, you could do it, you could kind of process the video on site and just kind of focus on any video that had motion in it, for example, for a short period of time. And so you could either do that, I'm guessing, at an edge server, or you could actually do it on the local device, right? Like you could have, you know, software on the cameras itself, right, doing the processing. It was interesting there noting that they think edge network is actually not just the edge servers, but also these local devices as well, right? And so computing can take place, I guess, on these IoT or these things as well.
I'm just circled into an extremely interesting position that edge networks are, because edge networks have decided to reduce the amount of bandwidth between endpoints, aka everyone out there. You know, Cloudflare, I think, has stated that they're within 100 milliseconds of the globe, you know, the vast majority of the internet population. You can extend the compute capabilities of your devices. And so in the world of dumb devices, cameras being one of them, or monitoring devices or sensors. Yes, in certain scenarios, like a car, for instance, you have the room in order to have the logic and compute maybe be on board the car. But with all these other devices that are transmitting, you're not going to have the compute space in a camera to be making machine learning decisions. That can be 100 milliseconds away in the nearest edge. It can be receiving all the data and doing that machine learning or some kind of compute calculation there. And so you're really extending the capabilities of the device is one of the potential scenarios I've kind of come up with edge networks is I've got all these dumb devices, and it could even be the era of smartphones that are cheap and plentiful. You know, so you're not, obviously I have an iPhone 10 and an Apple Watch. These are capable of doing extreme calculations on board, but for larger ones and or devices that don't have those compute capabilities could be being done in the nearest edge, rather than farther away in the cloud.
Okay. All right. I've got a few questions on this right now. So I think first, like you're talking about, let's say, you know, compute on these edge networks. So let's clarify for some of our viewers, like when we talk about these edge servers, these are data centers or servers or clusters of servers that are based closest to the user. So I guess probably hooked up to the ISP, right? Which is closest to the user somehow.
Yeah, I would think of them as one hop from the ISP.
Okay. And then these data centers or edge kind of, you know, servers are then connected through the internet's backbone, through basically fiber throughout the world, through underground cables, et cetera. And so when a user is connected, let's say to their ISP, the ISP connects to the data center, the edge network server, and then the edge network will route the data, let's say, to the other side of the world and to their edge server there, go through the ISP and go to the other user's computer, right? So basically it's right before usually the ISP, I'm guessing, right, that you have all of these edge kind of network servers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So, but before the ISP or before the other network providers. So, you know, there's, again, there's edge servers on both ends. So there's an edge server nearest to the origin servers as well, aka near the AWS compute center that it's housed in or near the data center it's housed in.
Exactly. Okay. So when I'm looking at Cloudflare's, you know, stuff, their site, I mean, it says like, hey, their Cloudflare Workers platform will run JavaScript, and it seems like it's more kind of a more of a limited kind of, you know, solution to run certain, you know, functions. Like, does Cloudflare have, you know, plans to do full compute, let's say like analyze images, machine learning, et cetera, on these edge servers? Or is that something that there are some fundamental restrictions over?
It's not restricted. Well, I take that back. Their first release of Workers did have restrictions on the amount of compute and memory it could do. So the intent is that it's doing something and some kind of compute quickly, some kind of action quickly. There's going to be some balance between core cloud and edge in terms of machine learning. And so, you know, the primary benefit you get in cloud is the kind of near infinite scale of compute. And so you can do a lot of massive neural network, deep analysis in the cloud that you're not going to easily replicate at the edge, not with the, you know, kind of caps that you have. That said, Cloudflare has released the caps and gone to a usage-based higher-end tier that will allow you to do more compute and more memory versus kind of what they restricted it at initially. So it's all based on WebAssembly. And so they support a wide variety of languages that all compile down into WebAssembly, and it just runs as a module on their server in their kind of in your own little sandboxed environment. There's a key value store that they provide that you can do some, it's like Redis, if you're familiar with from the development side. You're storing, you have access to your own little cache, basically. There's some really interesting things coming down the pipe. Fastly has the same environment. And so they're also creating a WebAssembly-based, slightly more restrictive on the amount of languages that they allow, supposedly faster environment because they are not, it's not using browser technology to run WebAssembly. It's using system-based WebAssembly. So, you know, there may be some differences there, but I view them kind of as the same platform. Kind of capable of the same things. So either look pretty interesting. But Cloudflare's has been out for 2 years, and Fastly has just gone to limited availability. They've been sitting and refining it kind of with their top customers in a very limited beta thus far. Mm-hmm. And so who knows what it like just came out in their last earnings report that same day they released it in limited availability, and that sold out instantly. So we don't quite know what Fastly is going to release. They did purchase a company to provide more API and app security. And so they're a very developer focused. And so if you're looking for a development platform and one that could maybe hold your hand to adopt, you know, they're coming down the pipe, but it's still not here yet. Mm-hmm. Cloudflare, on the other hand, instead of, you know, kind of hand holding enterprise customers, which they do. But they've got the approach that you just described earlier with their security and performance, is that they are looking to be the better internet. And so they've got a generous free tier where they're trying to sign up a lot of customers, and then, you know, you lure you into being a paid customer from there. Workers is available to anyone for free. You know, there's a free tier where you can go and explore with it. And like Fastly, they have developer tools that they built around it that you can use to test these things. However, they just had a couple of advances. I'm about to talk a little bit more on my blog. If any of you follow my blog, there will be more on this. In particular, they are released a product called Durable Objects, which if we want to get into the nitty-gritty of development a little bit, it's basically flipping serverless on its head a little bit. Serverless is all around stateless programming. You write this function, it does something. Durable objects are basically able to spin up those same compute modules, but store state between requests. And so think of it like shared office documents. You could have office documents floating around there out on the edge that multiple people are contributing to, or a private Zoom call that's living out on the edge, not really going to core compute. It's just exchanging information like video in that case between private parties. And so that, I think, is going to be something to watch with Cloudflare's compute platform. Mm-hmm. You know, so their compute platform has been out for 2 years. They've been iterating on it, getting customer feedback. I think they estimated 10 to 15% of their overall global traffic is now generated by workers. And they're building their own platforms on top of workers for some of their new product lines. And so that's the really getting into the interesting stuff with these edge networks is not only did they pivot and basically make CDN and all the other things they do in Cloudflare's case, security and performance, those are just applications running on workers. So CDN is but an application. They're building other application and product lines on top of this compute and programmable network capabilities. And then their customers are too.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And so there's a couple of different angles here that are all combining into one interesting company.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like in some ways, like, you know, they've got this whole platform, let's say of, 200 or so data centers around the world, the network's edge or the internet's edge in a sense. And they run their own services like, security and load balancing and CDN. And in a way they have platformized their whole system, where now their core services can be more like an application, and other people can now take advantage of their platform by writing their own, code to do different functions. And so, I mean, it's a fascinating kind of development in the future. I'm curious.
When you say it like that, it sounds like AWS a little to me. Like, they built this platform for them to use on their
exactly.
own e-commerce, and then they said, hey, we can productize this.
Exactly. I mean, it's fascinating because they've proven in a way, the value or the usage, and now they're increasing their total addressable market by opening up their core technologies and saying, hey, you guys can create more and, specific and whatever applications you need. I'm curious though, like when you compare what Cloudflare and Fastly is doing with the internet's edge computing, how would you look at it in terms of comparing it to, let's say, what AWS or Google or some of these other players could offer, in terms of edge computing? I was reading, Cloudflare was kind of saying, well, their advantage is that, a lot of companies, they're not just single cloud dependent, platform dependent. So they have a lot of different stuff going on, different cloud providers. They have their own, legacy stuff. They have hybrid stuff. So Cloudflare will offer kind of this all-in-one dashboard to kind of provide overall kind of security and optimization. And that's kind of what they think might be their advantage over, let's say, a single, like Amazon Cloud player. I mean, is that how you see it? Or how can Cloudflare and Fastly survive, in the world of kind of these mega, cloud players?
I think it goes way beyond that, but absolutely, yes. There's definitely things that are going to be interesting to do in the cloud versus things that are possible in core, in the edge. So like we talked about before, you're not going to be doing deep neural networks in the cloud necessarily, at least not currently. You're going to be doing that in core, in the edge. You're going to be doing that in core cloud. And then, the edge is going to be what's doing more, like that, you do the training of machine learning in core cloud, deploy it out to the edge, let's say. So there'll be some harmony there. To me, the interesting part of edge networks is the network part of the equation. And so compute is possible anywhere. You can always put a box somewhere near users. And now there's data center services spinning up, kind of a data center as a service. where you can go spin up your own computers everywhere. You know, Twilio uses them, Zoom uses them. To me, Core Cloud is not focused on the right things with Edge Network. Certainly, they're making movements closer to the ISP, but that's but one part of the equation. It's putting the compute closer. What about the programmable network that's spanning the globe? That's not something that right now the cloud is exposing at all. You're not, you can't sit and route things differently within AWS's infrastructure. AWS is responsible for that, and you're using their products that might intercommunicate. But it's the programmable network in between. It's kind of missing from the cloud players, and that's really not something I think they're ever going to focus on. You know, they do what they do extremely well. They're going to continue to spin up other products in Core Cloud. AWS does have Lambda at Edge, for instance. It's part of CloudFront. It's part of their CDN. So it's solely about distributing content, which is, you know, 1% of the potential of Edge networks. And so I don't look at Core Cloud as being the disruptor going forward or a problem going forward. I do more worry about at least the companies with profits now, like Zoom and Twilio, aren't likely to use these platforms. They're likely to build it themselves because they have the technical prowess to do so. In Twilio's case, they've already got all these edge servers that serve as interconnects for all the telecommunications networks that they have to talk to. So they can probably pivot those to be more of edge networks where they could have consumers talking to those edge networks to talk to their global Twilio cloud. I think that's absolutely where Twilio is going to be moving towards, but they're going to do that themselves. And Zoom is the same. They're going to be doing it themselves, but the other companies are moving towards the edge networks. And so that's where I'd keep my eye out.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to toss out some kind of crazy speculation on Starlink. So do you think Starlink could possibly disrupt what Cloudflare and Fastly and a lot of these players are trying to do? And let me give you some context with this. So Starlink, let's make some assumptions too. We're going to have to make some assumptions for the sake of, you know, the argument. But let's say, you know, Elon Musk has been saying that he thinks Starlink will take over half of the long haul data transmission in the world, or basically the internet backbone data. He thinks eventually, I don't know the exact time frame, might be 10 years, might be 15 years, but he thinks over half of that data transmission will happen through Starlink. And I think part of that is they're trying to do these space lasers between their satellites, right? So, you know, you think
about... I love that term.
Yeah, space lasers. It's great.
But, you think of Star Wars battles or something.
Yeah. Yeah, Starlink's a great name too. But think about, you have like 10,000s of these, you know, low Earth orbit satellites shooting space lasers. And the theory is lasers go faster in the vacuum of space than they do in fiber optics. So let's make an assumption. And this is interesting. Starlink will be a single player in the internet backbone economy, meaning they can handle the entire transmission of the data from any major point in the world to another point in the world. And then Starlink basically has these ground stations, right, where then the satellites will beam down the data to these ground stations, but they'll put all of the ground stations at the network's edge, you know, so they'll have it all in all of the major centers, like hundreds of, maybe thousands of places around the world. And so the concept is Starlink, basically, let's say I'm browsing a website or watching a video or something, right? I shoot up a request, Starlink will laser beam, right, the data, like in just milliseconds across the whole globe, right, through this, the low Earth orbit satellites, hit the closest network edge kind of data center they have, and then that will go to, let's say, the origin server, right? And so in some ways, Starlink has the ambition to create an entire internet backbone, including kind of their own network edge kind of network. The end result is, let's say hypothetically, let's assume they're able to do this. Let's assume they can get the costs of long-haul data transmission down by half, and that's the reason why they're able to take so much market share. And then let's also assume they're able to drop the latency in half of what it takes to travel the world with data, just generally speaking. So let's say they do, it's a complete revolution, hypothetically, that let's say Starlink is able to pull off half the costs, you know, drop the latency, you know, basically improve the speed by double. And in a sense, like all of the, or majority of the internet traffic now goes through Starlink. So now this whole kind of thing of Cloudflare or Fastly having to route the traffic or having to have their own kind of networks that should speed up latency is kind of, they have, it might be okay for the less than half of the data that's being transferred. But for the majority of data that's being transferred via Starlink, Starlink now is taking over that role to make sure that it's just going super fast in every direction. And they're setting up maybe their own, you know, compute and different, you know, services on the edge if need be. But I don't even know if they need to do that if the speed and latency is so fast, you know, with their network. What do you think?
I think that was a lot of ifs, for sure. It's the potential is there. So one of the appeals of edge networks is absolutely the backhaul, the kind of the back channels of these major pipelines of the internet. And that's, you know, a lot of the appeal of them, certainly that's Fastly's kind of claim to fame, is that they're so speed focused. And that's, I think, what Starlink is ultimately going to serve, is that it's, you know, right now its premise is that it's internet for everyone, is that it could be serving kind of underserved and remote areas and bringing really fast internet down. As, and so, you know, its role right now is ISP, or is the way I look at it. But certainly they've talked about kind of the inter-satellite communications via lasers, which would be really interesting, because the way to think about them would then be a mesh. You know, you could have these satellites intercommunicating, and then potentially, yes, you could have traffic from Australia being delivered to New York City faster, much faster than landlines. And so, yeah, it's pretty interesting when you consider, you know, low Earth orbit plus, you know, lasers that don't exist yet, intercommunicating these satellites. That'd be a pretty interesting paradigm.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little more immediate in my time horizon.
Got it.
Because that's, I don't know how long, there's a lot of ifs, and that's a lot of years on top of those ifs to build up what exists right now and does look exciting, and me possibly interested in getting Starlink, because I might start traveling around a little bit like you do. Mm-hmm. And so I can see the appeal for it off the bat, is that I can be traveling around the nation and have the same internet that I have that could possibly have via, you know, Google Fiber or something at home.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting, but it's, you know, right now I'm thinking more about 5G, its potential against edge networks, IoT, the explosion of measurements. Some of the things we talked about as the pros of edge compute, where you could be extending the smartness of devices. All of that, Starlink, I would say, has those potentials. Mm-hmm. It could be what if they put compute into satellites? There's an interesting thought where it could be beaming up, and that's because really that's the edge, you know, is it's named the edge because it's the closest point to ISPs in this particular case, or the nearest edge with cellular transmissions is towers.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the endpoints are talking to the tower. That's kind of the nearest edge of where it enters that network and then goes into the ISP. And then the edge of the internet is the other end of the ISP.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's potential with Starlink to be in that mix for sure. And a potential disruptor to I guess, what Fastly and Cloudflare are setting up. But invest, it's a little more into the here and now.
Yeah, sure.
Where I see, and if I do see Starlink making, you know, moves like that, if the Interlink laser system that they've been discussing becomes a reality in the next few years, it'd be interesting to see where they take it. But this is that seems pretty far away. And then, where are the edge networks of today going to be in the 5 years that takes? Sure. I don't know.
A few interesting things. is first in 2015 when Elon Musk announced Starlink. He was talking about, you know, rural internet, but he also made it a big point that his goal, and he saw that over half of the long haul data would go through Starlink. So it was actually part of the original vision of Starlink, actually, to be the major long haul, you know, internet backbone data, you know, provider in the world. What's also interesting, so a lot of people, they think of Starlink as just an ISP, but actually that's just a part of the vision or the picture. They've always had, you know, this whole backbone idea. And the other thing is,
yeah, that's it. That's the consumer facing side of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And they haven't really talked about
this. Yeah. Backhaul. I mean, it completely makes sense.
Yeah. They haven't really talked about the backbone market and what they're trying to do much. And that's part of, you know, the reason why people don't know about it. And another thing is they're testing the space lasers already. So last year, or this past year, I think it was in September, actually, they said they successfully tested space lasers sending, I think it was like hundreds of gigabytes between satellites. So it's still in development process, but, you know, it's interesting that, you know, whatever, and that's, I'm kind of biased because I'm a Tesla investor and I've been following, you know, Elon for a while, but he usually doesn't make claims that, you know, don't pan out. Usually they might be a few years late, but a lot of times he's very calculated in exactly what he talks about. And then the other thing is recently Starlink announced an agreement with Microsoft Azure. And you think there's no details on what the agreement was, but if you think about it, I'm like, that actually is kind of interesting because, you know, you just put, you know, basically hook up a Starlink ground receiver or transmitter like directly at every single Azure like data center, right? And what you've got is you've got this direct connection now to the internet backbone of Starlink, which is going to be possibly like two times as fast as any a fiber optic network, and it's controlled by a single player too. So that makes it even faster because you don't have to hop, change different providers, etc. And so it's interesting that they're already doing that because what would the agreement be otherwise? You know, if it wasn't for, you know, long haul internet transmission. So some interesting developments though, I think, with Starlink.
It is. Yeah. It's certainly something to watch, especially if it becomes, you know, kind of that mesh, you know, certainly the quantities of satellites that he's discussed is enormous. And simply just due to the logistics of how it has to work is that it has to talk to, have vision into a certain number of satellites from every dish. I haven't followed the kind of the back-end side of it, only the consumer side. Where I more envisioned, you know, it's clearly could be an ISP in that, but not everyone's going to have a dish. So certainly it could be broadcast into an area and then split from there. If it can deal with, you know, kind of a higher bandwidth, you know, you could be splitting up from there and, you know, kind of the way satellite intercommunications has been traditionally done.
Yeah.
But the backhaul is certainly something to watch.
Yeah. I have a private research team. I have a website where we collaborate on a wiki, and we've been researching Starlink. So I'll go ahead and I'll send you an invite to that. It'll help you just like look at all the Starlink, you know, latest data and research, and you'll get up to speed very super quick. But I'd love to hear your contributions or your feedback going forward, you know, as Starlink, you know, rolls out more and more, you know, satellites and rolls out more agreements. Maybe we can catch up like in a year or two or something regarding that.
It'd be interesting to watch. Certainly, it'd be interesting to watch it play out because it's there's a lot of internet traffic, and so, you know, that's leaving a lot of the pieces of the equation out. If you're handling major portions of the backbone of the internet, is that you're leaving out all the kind of internet networking switches and the interconnects between networks, and you know, you're basically just beaming up, circumventing the globe through the satellite mesh and back down in the place of your choice. I wouldn't say that entirely excludes edge networks. And so that's what I would watch is, you know, backbone is ultimately right now a commodity business, as is CDN and, you know, kind of the other things we've been talking about. Whereas right now, there's a development platform being built around edge networks. That'd be interesting to see where if you're that interested in Starlink, where does that go? Where do they provide interconnects into it that you can be making logic choices? Can you be programming in? Much less, I think there's some things that aren't going to be quite as easy with Starlink that Cloudflare has been trying to address, which is data compliance. And so one of the moves, I think it was in the birthday week blog from the founders of Cloudflare, they talked about what customer demand was driving as far as the capabilities of edge networks. And a little bit of shade to Fastly, they basically said it's not all speed. It, you know, speed is basically the fifth of five factors in why companies would be choosing edge networks right now. And one of the things that they've exposed in their edge network is what I call binning of your data, which is basically geofencing what portions of the globe that your code would deploy into in the edge networks. So they could basically say, I only want this code to run in the EU, and it would be in the 10 or 20 odd edge servers that serve up EU content. And that way they could be building that a company could basically be assured that their data is being retained within EU and for the data laws within that region. And so that's, you know, one capability that would be, you know, before I thought that Starlink would be a disruptor to these things, I'd want to see where they are on the development front, and I'd want to see where they are in some of these kind of concerns that the development front is starting to address, like geolocationality. Mm-hmm.
I hope that conversation was helpful. In the video description, I've added some links to Muji's Twitter account and his website. Also, I've added some links to investor presentations from Cloudflare and Fastly, so you can quickly access their company presentations. I've got some interesting conversations coming up, so if you'd like to keep updated, consider subscribing to my channel. We're talking about investing in the world from different angles, trying to question the traditional view in an effort to find the true essence of things. All my videos are also available as an audio podcast. Just search for Dave Lee on investing in your favorite podcasting app. Also, I spend a good deal of time engaging with people on Twitter, and my handle there is @HeyDave7. We'll see you in my next video. Thanks.